Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code HOWIE10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I am thrilled to be here, as always, and we have a fabulous last hour planned for you before we usher in the new normal and we bring on Howard Lawrence Carr. Before we get to that, though, something I want to talk about is a shift that is happening. And I don't know if it's because we're getting closer to 2022 or if it's the news cycle that we're in and the Biden administration is really going at a record speed. I say this a lot, but I knew they were going to be bad. I did not know they were going to be this bad this fast. And I read the piece yesterday from Spectator. It was titled "The Sleepwalkers." And it brought up a point that a few people have been making, which is, yes, Joe Biden is being compared to Jimmy Carter, but it took Jimmy Carter 4 years to get to the point where he was known as being such a terrible political leader. It took Joe Biden 9 months, and he is wearing that with pride. I mean, there is no doubt in people's minds at this point that this guy has lost his marbles. And it's more than just... It's more than just the bad speeches and the gaffes and, you know, the wandering onto the helicopter without taking questions. It's the actual decisions that are coming out of this White House. It's proving how it's not as easy as someone like Donald Trump made it seem. There's a lot that goes into leading the country. And just because you hire a bunch of people from, you know, Harvard and Yale, and as David Ignatius would call them, the best and brightest, and you got a Mayor Pete and, you know, a Kamala Harris, it does not mean that this is going to play well. It doesn't matter if you have a woke, diverse cabinet of people. If people don't know what they're doing, bad things will happen. And this administration is proof of that. Everywhere you look, things are bad. But I'm not here to be negative right now. I actually, surprisingly, I don't know if it's because it's, you know what day it is, Jared? It's Thursday. What do we call that in the Curley House?
Friday Junior.
It's Friday Junior. That's my producer. He remembers. It's Friday Junior, so obviously I'm excited because we're getting close to the weekend. But also, I really was having this moment this morning driving into work where I thought, there's something happening here.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
And I'm not the only one who thinks that. I know I've thought that in the past, but I have a theory as to why. But before I even tell you my theory, John Hinderaker has a post on Powerline Blog. If you don't check out his blog, powerlineblog.com, it's really great. They're like snack size articles that cover a vast array of issues, and they're really easy to read. And this one was titled, "People Are Catching On." Now, John wrote about a poll a few weeks ago that, actually, no, it was in July, that indicated that most Americans, 56%, think that Joe Biden is not directing policy and agenda for his administration. Now, so 56% of Americans didn't think Joe Biden was really the man in charge. I would probably say it's greater than that. You know, you got to take these polls with a massive grain of salt. But the idea was, he's not pulling the strings here. He is the puppet and someone else is pulling the strings. It's a question a lot of people have. Who's in charge? We don't know. But here's what's interesting. There's a Rasmussen poll out. It asked a different, more pointed question. The question was, how confident are you that Joe Biden is physically and mentally up to the job of being president of the United States? This is brutally clear, writes John Hinderaker, and the responses are not encouraging if you are a Democrat. Voters increasingly doubt that President Joe Biden is capable of performing the duties of his office. The poll indicates that only 27% of likely U.S. voters are very confident that Biden is physically and mentally up to the job of being president of the United States. This really is extraordinary. It is one thing to approve or disapprove of a politician's performance, but this tells us that only 41% of voters are even somewhat confident in Joe Biden's ability to discharge his duties as president. Not to do them well, but to do them at all. And when you listen to these cuts from his speech in Scranton, and I'm just going to play a couple of here because I know that depending on the audience, some people love this, some people hate it. So we'll keep brief. But Jared, let's play. I thought this cut of Joe was getting eerily close to one of his worst moments on the campaign trail. And then we'll play this first, and then I'll tell you what that is. Cut 20.
Their jobs are out of town, no longer in town. No longer in town. But 65% do not own an automobile. They live in a black or Hispanic neighborhood or a poor neighborhood. And all the time they waste trying to get to work.
That, I think, and maybe I'm off here, but that reminded me of another flashback. Let's play it.
Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids.
Did anyone else get that vibe from that? That's how I read it. And that was one of his more cogent statements. I mean, a lot of this stuff, you can't even understand what he's trying to say. Cut 30, please.
The bill invests in our workforce, providing much needed breeding room for families. My dad, I remember when we moved to Wilmington.
I think he meant to say, and you know, I'm not like these fact checkers. I'm not like these people who write for PolitiFact or Snopes. I can't read Joe Biden's mind like the press can. Joe Biden could say, I have the greatest voter fraud program in America. And the press can say what he really meant was this. And they break it down for you. He meant something so much deeper and so much more meaningful than what actually came out of his mouth. But when he says breeding room, I'm going to play a fact checker here. I think he meant breathing room. Is that fair? Okay, Jared's giving me the okay on that. We believe he meant breathing room. And I think probably the strangest part of the Build Back Better program is that they keep telling us it's going to cost $0, despite the fact that a lot of economists, maybe they're not up to Joe standards, but a lot of people have refuted this claim. But he is sticking by it. Cut 14, please.
They're about leading the world and continuing to let the world or let it pass us by. And by the way, they will not increase one single penny of the deficit. They are fully paid for. And all Wall Street points out they will grow employment by tens of thousands of people. Tens of thousands of people.
All of Wall Street. Could you be more specific? Could you give us one name? And by the way, if that didn't convince you, if that razor sharp logic didn't convince you that this plan is just A+, then this final comment that he made, and by the way, I'm doing you all a huge favor because I could play a lot more of these, but this final comment that he made really does show you that none of this makes any sense, and they're just hoping that we get tired of listening to him and say, sure, do the $3.5 trillion, because listen to this explanation. Cut 39.
And it does not increase the debt. When you talk about the number, we shouldn't even talk about the numbers, because it's all paid for, written in the same piece of legislation. So you pass the spending, you're also passing the tax cuts, and you're passing the taxes that are going to be increased.
We shouldn't talk about the numbers. Why are they so set on not talking about the numbers? I feel like 3.5...
Numbers don't matter, Grace. It's paid for.
I mean, when you really think about it, Pelosi's statement that she made years ago where she said we have to pass the bill to find out what's in it, that was, compared to what we're being told now, that was pretty generous, that they were even going to eventually let us see what's in it. Because now it's like, we're not talking about the numbers. Just let us do it. Just shut up and let us do it.
Yeah, all you need to know is that it's paid for, and when it's passed, there's going to be tax cuts and tax increases.
He also, Jared, he did get mad. He did go into yelly old man, and I think we should play this. This is cut 17.
How many people do you see out in McDonald's parking lots with their kids in their cars because they get access to the internet to be able to help the kid in school? What are we doing? This is the United States of America, damn it. What are we doing?
And you're the president, damn it. He's acting like he's running against
someone. I'm not the president.
He's acting like he's running against someone and he can't stand the direction the country's going in. You're in charge, dude. Did no one tell him yet? You're the president. It's not me. Stop yelling at me. I'm not in charge. I just have a radio show, okay? I'm not the president. That is your job. You kind of ran for it. You did a couple Zooms from your basement and you somehow got the job, okay? But you're in charge now. And he also yelled about cars. This is cut 18.
You take the train. We will take literally millions of automobiles off the road. Off the road. Saving tens of millions of barrels of oil. Dealing with cleaning up the air. This is not hyperbole. This is a fact. These are facts.
Again, I don't know what I did to get him so angry. I don't know if there's someone in the audience who betrayed him in some way, but he's misdirecting this. We're not the ones who did this, Joe. You have the power here. Lastly, it wouldn't be a Joe Biden speech if he didn't mention a trolley. What cut is this, Jared? Cut 19.
I remember riding the trolley. I lived at the end of the line, as they say, in Greenridge. Three blocks, the end of the line. Beyond the end of the line were the dumps. But Maloney Field was on the right. And the Little League baseball field I played in was down the bottom of the hill. But the point is, it made to work.
All right. I have to say this one thing. And then I am going to eventually wrap this up into why I feel positive about the future. I know what you're thinking. How on earth are you going to get to that? After the break, I will explain to you guys why I have a lot of faith in the country and where we're going. But before I do, a little side note. I noticed today that Joe Biden keeps referencing all of these places and like describing these images he's seeing in his mind of places he used to know. And it reminded me of a scene. There's a scene in The Office where Michael is trying to file like a suit of ageism. So he brings in the founder of the company to show off how wonderful old people can be and how much they contribute to conversation. And they're very interesting. And it goes awry because the old man starts doing what old men tend to do. And he's going down a rabbit hole and explaining nothing. And I really just, when I see this cut now, all I can think about is Joe. This is a cut from The Office.
I started this company in 1949.
Wow.
Back then, it was an industrial supplier of metal brackets, mostly, for construction.
Oh, boy.
And then Mifflin. Of course, he killed himself later. But I knew Mifflin through the Rotary Club.
Great.
And he was at dinner with Beverly and her husband. Oh, what was his name? Jerry. Jerry Trupiano from South Jersey, and he was tall. Both he and Mifflin were tall guys.
Great, and that's great. Thank you for coming in. Robert Dunder, everybody. Thank you. That was wonderful.
Someone needs to give Joe Biden the thank you for coming in and just like slowly walk him off the stage when he does these speeches. All right, when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. But first, I have to tell you about an incredible product. The Thunderstorm Air Purifier is one of the Eden Pure's best-selling products. And now Eden Pure is offering my listeners a special Thunderstorm 3-pack. That's right, you'll save $200 on an Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-pack. So that means you'll get 3 units for under $200. And you'll save $200. And you're going to want 3 units, Jared, because while it's nice to have one in your kitchen, and it's always nice to have one in the office because people are always microwaving fishy things, but it's also great to have one in your car.
Yeah, I keep one in my 59 Ford Fairlane, and when I'm driving down by the reservoir, which used to be by the woods.
Hey. Don't Joe Biden us. You get back on track, sir.
I do keep the Eden Pure Thunderstorm in my car, which is great because it's small. And it's portable, and it comes with a little USB cable that you just plug into the unit, and then you plug that into your USB port, turn it on just like you would in the house, and you have that ionized super oxygen in your car, which gets rid of fast food smells, any oil smells, just general car smells like that. If your windows are down, you got some pollen in there, can get rid of that, help just make the car ride a little more fresh, which reminds me of that one time,
Jared, I'm going to give you the hook, sir. That Jared Diglio, thank you very much. Please, everyone give him a round of applause.
That was made of limestone, and it sparkled in the sun.
But really, if you want a great product, it is the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Other air purifiers can cost up to $600, and they're big and bulky, and sometimes they don't really work that good. These units are small, compact, easy to use, no air filters required. All you have to do is go to EdenPureDeals.com, click on my name, and put in code word GRACE3 to save $200. $100 for their special three-pack. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Click my name and use code word GRACE3. When we get back, I am here to spread some positivity. I think we all need it, and I'm going to tell you why things are looking up. Don't go anywhere.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
I already know tomorrow is going to be a jam-packed day for several reasons. One, Joe Biden has a town hall with Anderson Cooper tonight. And two, he's speaking right now with Kamala Harris. And according to my producer, Jared, the sound is definitely worth playing. So we will save that probably for tomorrow. We do have Scott Hounsell from Red State coming up in the next segment. Today's poll question is brought to you by Nauset Disposal, affordable rubbish and recycling from Duxbury to Provincetown. Go to NausetDisposal.com. That's NausetDisposal.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
What does Joe Biden say first at tonight's town hall? Come on, man, don't jump. Something about a female's attractiveness, no joke, or something about one of his pops.
I'm going to change it. I'm being a coward. I'm going to say no joke.
No joke is in the lead at 56%.
What's number two?
Number two is something about a female's attractiveness.
Oh,
at 15%,
wow.
15%, 13% for something about one of his pops, 12% believe it'll be, come on, man, and only 4% for don't jump.
I wouldn't rule out don't jump. It depends, like Taylor said, it depends on the shape of the auditorium. If it has high seats, then that's going to be a definite comment from Joe. I was talking in the last segment about why I'm feeling hopeful, and I was thinking about this this morning while I was driving in. I was listening to Ben Shapiro, and he was talking about how the Southwest Airlines is basically caving on this vaccine mandate. And it got me thinking, you know, there's a lot of power in sticking together. And I don't think we consider that enough. And then to that point, I think over the last couple of years, especially with conservative radio, people have gotten used to talking about cancel culture and talking about, you know, the woke police and critical race theory and all of these things. And there has been this effort on the left to kind of poo-poo it and say, oh, you're not actually that scared of this, or oh, it's not that big a deal. You don't care if they take the logo off the syrup. You don't care about this. You're just, you know, people like Grace Curley and Howie Carr and Tucker Carlson, they're trying to feed red meat to the conservative listeners. And I think the positive of reaching this breaking point of vaccine mandates and, you know, the FBI looking into school parents at school boards. Right now, Merrick Garland is actually testifying in front of Capitol Hill, and he's getting grilled by Congressman Jim Jordan. I think the positive of all of that is that the frog is finally leaping out of the water. And follow me here. There's this theory that if you boil the frog and you start it off slow, the water gets warmer, the frog doesn't realize that you're heating up the water. And then by the time the frog is basically cooked, the water's so hot, it's too late. But we do seem to be hitting a point where it's very hard to ignore this kind of authoritarian style of governing that the left has started and seems very confident in. And I'm very happy about that. I like that people are chanting, let's go, Brandon. I like that people are waking up. I like the parents are going to school board meetings and yelling. And I'm not saying violence is ever the answer, but you do get the sense. And whether it's NBA players on Fox News talking about how they're not going to get vaccinated and they don't want people deciding what they can do with their bodies, or police officers resigning on the radio and saying Governor Inslee can kiss my you-know-what, there's this rebellious spirit that's in the air that I haven't felt in a really long time. And I don't think this country is going down without a fight. I think there's a lot of freedom-loving people that make up the United States of America. And I think that we hit a point with Dr. Fauci where we all felt really tired. And I thought, oh, Americans are getting worn down from this. But over the last couple weeks, I don't know if it's the new season, but people are fighting back and I'm all for it. When we get back, we're talking to Scott Hounsell, speaking of Dr. Fauci, about the Wuhan lab. Don't go anywhere.
You live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. A few months ago, there was a bombshell that the media did not cover. And I know what you're thinking. There's so many options that we could go to. Is it the Hunter Biden bombshell? No. I'm talking about the Dr. Fauci email treasure trove that a lot of people didn't want to go near. And when some outlets, including one of my favorites, Red State, did report on Dr. Fauci's emails, what some critics picked up on wasn't really the biggest part of the story. A lot of people, because of how polarized the mask issue has become in this country, and I understand it completely, people were very upset that Dr. Fauci had emails where he encouraged or where he said that masks weren't effective, and then he changed his mind. And people kind of they really got obsessed with that part of it. But what I would argue was the bigger issue is this gain of function research at the Wuhan lab and what Fauci knew about this virus, when he knew it, what he was allowing to happen. And furthermore, what he testified to when he was going back and forth with Dr. and Senator Rand Paul. Now, before we bring on our next guest and we talk about the latest breaking news in this story, I do want to play a little flashback for everyone just so you can remember the level of smugness and arrogance that Dr. Fauci had when he claimed that there was no gain of function research at the Wuhan lab. This is Cut 19.
Dr. Fauci, knowing that it is a crime to lie to Congress, do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain-of-function.
So what was? Let me finish. You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans.
Right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly. And I want to say that officially. You do not know what you are talking about.
Anyone who's ever, you know, interrogated or even questioned someone on something knows that when people get that heated and that defensive, it usually means they're protesting too much. Now, I don't want to sound like the Biden administration and say, because every time someone asks a question about the supply chain crisis, they say, oh, it's very complicated. It's tricky. It's so complex and hard to understand. But when it comes to this, the NIH EcoHealth Alliance and this virus research grant, it can get in the weeds. So we're going to bring on one of the experts on this, one of the most brave journalists who's really been hunkering down and trying to figure out exactly what happened with this virus, Scott Hounsell, otherwise known as Hound Sizzle. Thank you so much for joining the Grace Curley Show.
Thanks for having me, Grace. As always, it is a pleasure.
All right. Now, Scott, you got to kind of break this down for us from the beginning. What is the latest update with this NIH letter?
Representative Comer, he's out of Kentucky, had sent a letter to the NIH requesting certain information regarding gain-of-function research and the grants that were issued to the EcoHealth Alliance as a portion of that type of research. In response to that letter, a letter dated yesterday, which we got late last night, there was information suggesting that it was not just information suggesting. The NIH responded to that letter specifically stating that there was indeed gain-of-function research conducted underneath that grant, and that they went on further to spin some lies, which I'll be covering a little bit later today at Red State. But among those lies is that this type of research could not have created the SARS-CoV-2 virus.
Now, when you talk about EcoHealth Alliance, I think this is where it gets a little fuzzy for people, because it's hard to understand why EcoHealth Alliance, what that has to do with Dr. Fauci. Can you kind of break down how this works?
Certainly. So oftentimes the NIH and the NID offer grants to conduct certain types of research, usually in trying to defend against viral pathogens or bacterial infections that may occur in the future. And it's usually a pretty reasonable process. We conduct that research at various labs throughout this country, including in North Carolina with Dr. Ralph Barrick. However, the EcoHealth Alliance, which is headed by a guy by the name of Peter Daszak, went and was able to apply for and receive a grant from the NIH to study bat coronaviruses and the potential emergence thereof. And in doing so, they were conducting a lot of research, including at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which is where it's presumed the lab that this virus may have escaped from.
Now, when Dr. Fauci was, he was so adamant with Rand Paul that there was no gain of function, which obviously by any definition there was. But now, why are they claiming that this could have never created the virus? Is there any evidence to show that this, that COVID-19 could not have been created from that lab?
Well, the actual shocking part about it is the evidence and the information they used to reach that determination was provided by the EcoHealth Alliance. So, in other words, the reports that they received regarding the grant from EcoHealth Alliance are what they used to make the judgment and determination of whether or not this virus came from that lab. The problem, obviously, that exists with that is, obviously, I don't think the EcoHealth Alliance is about to just go out and willy-nilly admit to global genocide. But in addition, Peter Daszak, the president of the EcoHealth Alliance, has proven to be a liar and a Chinese stooge, and has been out defending the Chinese government as well as the Wuhan lab as early as January of 2020, before we even knew anything about this virus. He was running defense on it. So anything from the EcoHealth Alliance should be immediately dismissed as biased and probably unreliable.
Now, you write here, Scott, to add further fuel to the fire, the NIH letter also confirmed that EcoHealth Alliance was also in violations of the terms of their grant. What were those terms and why were they in violation?
There is certain language in the grant that stated that they had to report certain things when the levels of types of research, including gain of function, reached a level that was above what the grant allowed for. This essentially confirms that reached the level of gain of function research, because there is no level below that in the language. The NIH found that not only did they reach that level, but the EcoHealth Alliance did not report that in their reports to the NIH, and the NIH has now given them 5 days to update their reporting and confirm the information that they've assumed will lead to the fact that they were in violation of their grant.
Now, I have to ask you, Scott, I mean, you've written so many of these stories about Dr. Fauci, about the Wuhan lab, and it always surprises me because, you know, most journalists are looking for a smoking gun, and there's about 15 smoking guns in all of your stories, and yet they never really seem to make an impact as far as Dr. Fauci's, you know, public appearances go or, you know, his popularity with the left. Do you ever lose faith that at some point he's going to have to answer for all these lies, or do you think that he's going to get a complete pass forever from the mainstream media?
I unfortunately have lost any faith that Dr. Fauci will face any type of responsibility or consequence as a result of his behavior. It goes beyond the fact that he lied. It goes beyond the fact that he's misled information to Congress. It goes beyond the fact that there's additional information to suggest that they have withheld information that should be withheld, like, for instance, my FOIA requests, several FOIA requests that I've requested from them. This goes to the fact that not only did Dr. Fauci lie to Congress, not only did he withhold this information, but this entire type of research, which was being conducted at a foreign bioweapons lab and done outside of the scope of the grant, was done so also counter to an order of the President of the United States of America from 2014 to 2017. There is a standing order that this research was not to be conducted, and it was conducted anyway.
Yeah, and I think that, Scott, what a lot of people, as Joe Biden would call us, the regular Americans, when we hear this story, you know, you can go into the Peter Daszak and the Lancet letter and the EcoHealth Alliance, and that's all very important, and I'm glad that, you know, you're going through this. But I think what a lot of people question is, why were we funding this to begin with? Like, why is America funding a lab in Wuhan? And obviously, more people started openly talking about this after Jon Stewart's appearance on Stephen Colbert. But I think this is something that a lot of conservatives have been asking since the beginning. Like, why is this even happening in the first place?
It goes beyond the fact that the lab is in China. This lab is literally in a PLA camp. It is the Chinese military that runs this lab. So the question that should exist is not just why is this being conducted in a lab in China, but why is this being conducted in a Chinese military lab? That has never been answered. That continues to be ignored and not answered. That, to me, is the biggest issue that has been that we've been facing. We have no fewer than six labs here in the United States that are capable of conducting this research. Are you telling me that EcoHealth Alliance, which received a grant from the United States federal government, could not have conducted this research in the United States? Was the University of North Carolina not available? What about the University of Minnesota, where they conduct a lot of this research as well? They do a lot of influenza-type gain-of-function research there as well. There's also many labs in Western Europe, and the University of Erasmus in Rotterdam is another one that they conduct this type of research at. Why? Why, oh, why would we conduct gain-of-function research that literally can create viruses that can be used as bioweapons at a lab controlled by the Chinese military? That's a question I want answered, and to this date, it has not been.
Now, Scott, the last thing I want to ask you, and for people who want to find Scott's work, he writes for Red State. You can follow him on Twitter at HoundZizzle. The last question I want to ask you, Scott, is I've been really noticing a sudden shift from the mainstream media. And I've read articles over the past couple of days from people like Dave Bossi and other conservatives that are saying that you might start seeing or you might start noticing a little positive spin from the mainstream media as far as COVID goes. And I guess the thought process is the Biden administration can't handle any more big losses. So they're going to try to, you know, shift this into a win, like, oh, they're tackling COVID. And then we also saw with Dr. Fauci, he came out and he tried to pull the whole, you know, don't get together for Christmas. And he got such swift backlash that he had to come out the next day and backtrack that. Are you noticing that all of these mask pushers and vaccine mandators, they're a little bit on their heels lately?
It's always been political, Grace. And we've been talking about that now for, what, 6 months? It has always been political. It was first used to get rid of Trump, and now it's being used to shore up Biden and the left as they approach 2022. The problem is the data has never matched their narrative. The fact that they go out and slam Florida and Mississippi and Alabama as all these hot spots in Texas, but then they fail to mention that they still haven't reached the areas of some of the numbers that they had in New York and Connecticut and Massachusetts earlier on in the pandemic. This has always been political. And now that the politics don't speak to save them, and there's nothing that they can save themselves from, they are now hurting them. And they'll start to retract them one by one. They'll start to walk them back and say, oh, well, look how good we're doing now. We don't need these mandates any longer. Oh, yeah, things are going to get better. As they've watched people start to say, I'm not going to get vaccinated. Look what happened with Southwest. Look what happened with Delta Airlines. Look what happened with In-N-Out Burger. You're seeing them to start saying, no, enough's enough. We get it was bad. We get that we wanted to protect everyone. We've done what we can, and now it's time for us to start working towards getting back to normal.
Yeah.
And it's going to start getting worse and worse for them.
I totally agree. Scott Hounsell, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Where can people read all of your work, and what can we expect later today as far as Fauci's concerned?
As I continue to work on the pieces that I'm working on, we're going to find more about what lies were said in the letter that the NIH sent. The NIH's letter was woefully lacking in a lot of fact, and in fact bordered on misinformation and lies. So we're going to be going over that, and you're going to be able to find that at Red State, redstate.com. You can follow that on Twitter, and you can also follow me on Twitter, at HoundSizzle.
Thank you very much, Scott. When we get back, we will be talking to Howard Lawrence Carr about what he has planned for his show. I have a feeling he's going to get to some of these Joe Biden cuts. Call me crazy. All right, we will be right back with more. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
She's a master at pouncing, weaponizing, and seizing.
To give you a reference point, I'm somewhere between a snake and a mongoose. And a panther.
She's Grace Curley.
Our democracy is on the line. I don't want America to lose its democracy. I don't want America to be a country of minority rule. And I don't want America to be a place where black and brown people like me, whose ancestors fought and died for the right to vote, are restricted from going to the voting booth. That is the most un-American thing to do. So I have this platform that I have now, and I'm speaking very passionate about it. Democrats, get your butts in gear and get passionate about saving this damn country. You're not doing it. You're weak. You are weak. You are weak.
He went. That was Don Lemon, by the way, in case you didn't know. And he went on to say that it's not his job to sell the Democrat agenda, which I'm sure was a shock to Nancy Pelosi, who thinks it's specifically Don Lemon and company's job. People like Chris Cuomo and other people from CNN to sell their agenda. So it's interesting that he has a different idea of what his job is instead of what Nancy thinks it is. But today's car crossover is brought to you by Toyota of Portsmouth, the house of value. I love my new RAV4 XLE that I got at Toyota of Portsmouth, and the process of getting it was delightful. They're located just south of the Portsmouth traffic circle off 95. So go to toyotaofportsmouth.com or visit them at the showroom and tell them I sent you. Joining me now is the one and only Howie Carr. Howie, how's it going?
If you have the facts, pound the facts. If you have the law, pound the law. If you have neither, pound the table. That's what I was reminded of when I was listening to Don Lemon, pound the table.
Yeah, and you know what, Howie? I mean, you're the same as me. You've been at this desk before with this microphone. It's never good to be pounding the table. It just doesn't sound good on the air.
No. I mean, you know, especially for a cool medium. I mean, TV is different than radio. I mean, we can get away with it better than he can. I mean, nobody wants somebody in your living room pounding the table at 9 o'clock at night or whenever the hell he's on.
Yeah, you know? And it's interesting because Don Lemon and Joe Biden are both kind of in the habit of yelling at us, and I just don't understand why. I mean, I thought when Joe Biden was elected that all of these problems were going to be solved, and we're still getting yelled at. You know, it's still somehow our fault, so I'm confused.
Do we know yet what the Rosie Theater is, or the or Rosie Movies or something?
I thought I knew
all the old time studios from the silver screen golden age, but I never heard of the Rosie Studio.
That's because what Joe Biden's referring to, Howie, is not the golden age. It is actually the dinosaur age. And you, compared to Joe Biden, it's you are, you know, the fountain of youth compared to Joe.
Do you think he liked, what do you think Joe liked better in his youth, Buster Keaton or the Keystone Cops?
Well, considering he wasn't a fan
or
of the
maybe
Keystone
Charlie
pipeline.
or maybe Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, I would say Charlie. He's a big fan of Charlie's in general. Charlie Parker, Charlie Chaplin, I'm sure. Howie, are
Governor
you,
Charlie Parker in Massachusetts.
You're actually going to have some fresh sound because Joe and Kamala were speaking today at an event.
Okay, well, I look forward to that. I got to get a cut sheet for the old stuff too, because I may come back to that. My favorite is the one with the where he's talking about the kitchen table, or is it the kissing table?
Hey, who's to say? You'll need a translator, that's for sure. All right, I'm done for today, but I'll be back tomorrow. Don't miss Howie's show. Over and out. It's the Grace Curley Show.
And I learned that at the kitchen table in Scranton, the place where you take care of one another.